At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to Imps Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the Social Suplex newsletter, Oaf on Social Suplex. Shout out to Trish and Tim and everybody who's contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was, 30 minutes of the final week before SummerSlam, and with the release of WWE Untold. I'm going to do a quick little talk about WWE Untold. I've watched the first episode, so I've got the gist of the feel of the show they're going for, really. Then we'll jump into Smackers and Monday Night Raw, because I've got time to talk about WWE Untold, because like the SmackDown review is very much of a show which is of that second week of a 3-week build, aka the carryover, sustaining of the arc we set up just to make sure everybody knows where all the characters are. Then Monday Night Raw, we got some go-home angles, but it's still like, it's the third part of a 3-week build, like with Punk and Gunter. You got Punk comes number one contender, Gunter gets the promo win, and then Punk gets a promo win. Like, very, very standard, which makes it quite interesting to then watch WWE Untold. We've got future. It's like we know the prophecy. We know, as we are watching this, where they're talking about all these plans you have to make for the future. I'm watching a WWE where builds are just currently like at a rapid pace and it really doesn't feel like there is that bigger picture like really in view at the moment. I mean, that does lead me pretty easily into talking about WWE Untold. Weirdly, the IGN review, I feel like, hit the pulse really, really well. Out of all the different reviews I've read, that's still the one. Maybe it's because it was the first one I saw because it was shared in the group chat amongst the Social Suplex folk. But I felt like it really did hit the pulse. They gave it a 5 out of 10. Pretty much just saying they don't really know who it's for because wrestling fans aren't going to learn anything new here in terms of like the operations of anything. But then because the way it's delivered, it's not really open enough for non-wrestling fans to get that much of a kick out of it anyway. So like for me, the target audience is somebody who jumped on board for WWE in the Netflix era and since the debut hasn't looked anything up. It's just like just watched it, just popped up on Netflix, they've just watched it, which I don't doubt there are going to be some people like that. It's just weird to make a show for that niche. Really, it's a wrestling thing, but it feels like it's a very WWE thing. It's like we're going to open the doors, but it's still going to be very, very controlled and we're going to be getting across certain narratives. But for me, that's why I would be far more interested in seeing this portion of WWE that we've seen on TV right now. It's been about 3-4 months since WrestleMania, and it doesn't really feel like they've been able to click together all of these different pieces into something which is long-term going somewhere clear. It still feels like they're trying to figure it out. And me personally, if you're opening the doors to everything, I'm far more interested into seeing the part of you figuring it out. Then in the later episodes, you can present it as, look, we did it. We figured it all out. Look how great we are. You know, it's still a promotional tool. That was the other note coming out of it as well, again, through Dave Meltzer, that the idea of this was to present Paul Levesque like a Dana White, to put him there as this figure who is running the WWE creative that he's seeing on screen, and then the wrestlers themselves are kind of gears that can change and shift. That doesn't mean it's like presented as that callous in the editing. They still do a lot to try and make you empathetic to the wrestlers. But the end goal being that, no, Paul Levesque is like the main character being presented here, which I guess feeds off of that original idea when the Netflix debut happened. There was that big presentation of putting the creative force front and centre right at the start of the show. Pretty much just saying right to your face, this is a scripted, produced show that you are watching. Because I don't doubt there are fans out there who didn't know how micromanaged matches and things are. That documentary, the documentary from the 90s, was from the 90s. The 90s was quite a long ago. I suspect that quite a few people, it still stands up, it's still an amazing documentary to watch. But, you know, I suspect there's quite a few fans nowadays who haven't watched that. Because obviously I grew up in a world where pretty much every fan I talked to fully knew. just like all the commentators' lines being fed to them in real time type of stuff. Like that is the type of thing where just it's almost common knowledge because a really well-made documentary just got out there. But this this show is still being presented within a kind of kayfabe. There's the television kayfabe, then there's the kayfabe of how WWE want to present themselves, and it's still within that. There's a conversation in our chat about reality TV, and it's kind of a bit like that. A lot of the stuff you're watching, it's not real. It's not like 100%. Like, it's very, very difficult to be real when you know there's microphones, lighting, cameras all over the place. It's difficult to be normal when you know you're being filmed in that way. It's just watching the creative room footage as well in the first episode. I just find it funny when Triple H just swears and then looks up at the camera being like, oh, I forgot I'm being filmed. I'd found that funny. I mean, that's one thing about it as well, is I've watched WWE made things about backstage stuff before, and it feels like they're still trying to, like, not rock any boats with any ways of speaking or whatever. At least in this one, you're going to hear the F word, and they've not bleeped it, or at least in the UK version. They've not bleeped it and not censored it, so they let that stuff kind of flow. For me, that's a really strong selling point in trying to make it feel real. You don't cut any of that stuff out. You don't sanitize it too much, which definitely during the Vince years, whenever they did a backstage thing, it was always very sanitized, and look how happy a family we are, da 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 da. Well, this is more about, look how well the cogs of the machine turn, how well they work. Well, arguably the best done humanizing part of the first episode, depending on how much you love doggos. If you love doggos, it's going to be Rhea Ripley playing with the doggos, obviously. But the way that they presented Chris Parks or Abyss in there as somebody performing at work who started to get really stressed when his match was running overtime. His boss is right there, and he really gets so stressed. You can just sense the anxiety just oozing off of him. But that's not the humanizing part. If anything, that's like peeling back a little layer. And I was like, that's kind of interesting that they were willing to present Bruce Pritchard in that way. Where it's, for me, that's like the top of the scab, being like, oh, it's like, it's interesting. It's like, he's stressed because he doesn't want to do that. But, you know, for me, just watching, it's like, oh, it's interesting that the vibe was able to get that stressful in a way. Just, you know, just little things I'd like to see dug into more, which this documentary will not do. I wouldn't be surprised if that part's not looked into at all in terms of timekeeping and things. But that wasn't the humanizing part. The humanizing part obviously showed that then William Regal went up to Chris Parks in there, basically just as like, oh, he was the calming figure in that room. It's like, oh, that was successfully humanizing that they included that. And as we've learned throughout the wrestling history, once again, something villainizes Bruce Pritchard. He keeps doing it to himself. How does it keep happening? It's crazy. Like, every documentary comes out looking like a piece of shit. How does that consistency keep happening? It's crazy. The Vince documentary came out like a complete tool, a complete knobhead. And this one again, episode one, he's a boss who's immediately made his employee turn into an anxiety mess. Just like, come on, Bruce. Anyway, tangent. But yeah, overall, the IGN review, 5 out of 10, feels like it hits absolutely perfectly. It's like, who is this actually made for? Only thing I think of was new fans who literally jump on board with Netflix and then also didn't look into anything themselves afterwards, which feels like the niche gets smaller because we are in an internet age where if someone's interested, they can just Google the name of a thing and very quickly you're just learning about it. So I'll watch the rest of the series so I can like maybe talk about it next week a little bit. But obviously next week's the SummerSlam review and I'm pretty certain I've been successfully ill or busy. Actually, no, I think I have actually been successfully ill for every single SummerSlam. It goes back to Wrestling Headlines, so like the former places do stuff for. Like, quite genuinely, I would get ill just regularly. I think one time it was a power cut or something. So it's been years since I did a review of SummerSlam. Unless I did it last year, I just completely forgot. I definitely didn't do the year beforehand. I still haven't watched the Roman Reigns Jey Uso main event that SummerSlam. Not watched it. I definitely watched last year's. So maybe I've reviewed that. I've just forgotten. But I don't have a good streak with SummerSlam, so I'm warning you. If I get ill, par for the course. It happens every time. But yeah, so before I get into the main one of it, WWE Untold. Like, you kind of know what it is when you're going into it. It's the WWE kayfabe of how they want to be presented. It does contain just complete bullshit, but you do get to see the gears turning. So even though you've heard of how it works backstage and all those gears turning, you still get to see it. So you're getting to see something that you already knew, but obviously you've not been given the cameras to see it backstage before. Like, they explain how the WWE calendar works. Like, it's that level. There's sort of things. It's like, oh, is this even aimed at anybody who watches wrestling? Is it the Netflix thing of the sports documentary kind of series? Because it comes up at the start saying this is a like Netflix sports documentary type of thing. So it fits in with their other stuff, like their basketball and whatever. Anyway, that's WWE Untold. It is what it is. you know what you're getting into. Oh, and the answer is yes, anything controversial to do stuff isn't touched upon, which I think would have been like, it just human for me, that humanizes it even more. What they don't want to paint WWE as any kind of villain at all. So like the whole CM Punk thing, obviously not mentioning AEW, kind of fine with that, but they peel back enough to try and explain the animosity between CM Punk and Paul Lebec, but they don't go into any of the nasty business that happened. Like, nothing about them serving his papers on the day of his wedding day. Like, nothing like that. It's just, you know, oh, we had a bit of an argument because it came from us being wrestlers in that competitive atmosphere, and that just, when he became an official, that just continued, and that was not workable. That's the kind of way they present it. Anyway, let's jump on over to Friday Night SmackDown, 81 minutes edited on Netflix, because I got to jump from WWE Untold over to the Hulk Hogan tribute show. Oh, just the first 10 minutes were in memoriam of the racist, with the crew out on stage with all the black faces to or in the back. Well, you know, those that are left on SmackDown, there aren't many. Then right into the opening segment with the transphobe. It went from Hulk Hogan tribute to Logan Paul comes out. Oh God, what a way to start the show. You gotta let the audience that lost Hogan know they're still gonna be catered to. Here's another blonde dickhead. Also good on Drew for I forgot me US passport. Guess I'll have to miss that transphobe and Jelly Roll tag match. Oh, just such a shame. Went to a wedding in Scotland and then, yeah, didn't have his US passport, so actually couldn't get back into the US. So he's kind of just stuck. But you know, WWE have connections, they can get him back in. Or, as Drew is maybe, like, oh no, I forgot my passport. I guess I could just miss it. The complications outside of my control. Oh no. And in Cody's promo later in the show, he even called Hogan's legacy complicated during his promo. And there's been a lot of talk since of like anyone who's calling this complicated is like, well, I mean, it's only complicated if you want to downplay his self-confirmed racism, which obviously WWE want to do. And they're talking about how he's just so important to the legacy of WWE. And when like Raw, they had another tribute. The first like 8 minutes of the show was yet another tribute to Hulk Hogan. Triple H giving another speech, talking about the importance of his legacy to WWE, to American wrestling, obviously bigging it up to make it feel like this big, iconic, epic thing, calling him that giant and in that wrestling world and his contributions being indisputable, but still bringing up the word complicated because he wasn't just your normal racist. And I can't recommend enough that you listen to the One Nation Radio tribute. They would call it a tribute. I know, maybe it's a tribute to Tampa, but definitely not a tribute to Hulk Hogan. But talking about the Hulk Hogan death and his career and things, is I highly recommend listening to that One Nation Radio episode from last week if you haven't already. However, afterwards, after we got through the Hogan tribute, after I'd skipped the Logan Paul segment, the first show where I've literally put every segment bar the main event into the other notes. Like, hey, if I played looser with the format, I'd even put the main event in there too. The most nothing second week of a 3 week build show I've covered here on Social Suplex. Just, oh boy. When I said I've got more than enough time to talk about WWE Untold, this show is why. It is nothing. So let's quickly blast through Friday Night SmackDown and the main event, the WWE Tag Team Championships, Wyatt Six versus Andrade and Rey Fénix. And since you
did... At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Get out of your system the first time around. Here's what's going to happen. At SummerSlam, those tag team titles go high above the ring. And it will be tables, ladders, and chairs for the WWE Tag Team Championship.
Good news! Rey Fénix hasn't kept the questionable white bodysuit from last week. Other than that, before I'd even watched either show, I was certain I'd be talking about two Raw and Smackers main events ending in DQs. How else are you meant to build a stadium show so quickly? The challengers having the match won before Nikki Cross pulled the referee out of the ring and the bell got immediately called for. Like, yay! The best kind of finish. The inconsistency rule finish. The inconsistent rule DQ interfering with the referee that exists in convenience. Eric Rowan igniting his beatdown called out one team after the other. Braxton were shortly joined by the Machine Guns. Street Profits joining into before DIY brought Nick Aldis on out with them. An attempt to end the show in hyped chaos, Aldis announced a six-team TLC for SummerSlam. The crowd loved the announcement before all the teams just jumped on each other. I heard a this is awesome, but I didn't see anyone clapping or chanting. Like, they all had their phones out filming and enjoying the chaos. Like, of course, WWE piped in crowd noise over an already loud and good reaction. I just watched him like, but why? But why? Like, even one of the things that Bruce Pritchard said during the Netflix thing, where one of the words he said was overproduced. Like, he was trying to get him to move on. Like, it's fine. It's overproduced. We learn from it. I watched this main event angle, and I'm like, yeah, also overproduced. You don't need to pipe in the crowd noise. It has become like a production note to pipe in a this is awesome amongst the crowd noise to make it sound like there is that rippling of real, genuine, awesome enjoyment. But, you know, I can see them. And the crowd were having a good time. They weren't clapping and stuff, doing that this is awesome chant, but they're still giving a good reaction. It was odd. Yeah. Odd, but also, like, predictable that, of course, WWE would do this. 1,000 times, take the genuine live reaction. If you muck up, then that's not on the crowd. You don't have to overpipe them. And, of course, I'm going to get more of this because I'm watching the edited version, so I see the version that WWE want to get out rather than the live version, which only so much you can do. So I see how they want to present themselves, which means, like, any chant, including a swear word, I just miss. It happened one night Raw. I got, like, a dull boo sound when I'm watching people in the crowd laughing in response to something that's being chanted. So there was a pause for the funny chant, and they didn't just edit out the segment and continue with the promo. They instead showed the crowd reaction, but with a loud, dull boo over the top of it. just cut it out, surely. You've altered the audio anyway. It's so strange. But speaking of altering audio as well, and I've thought about it when I mentioned Fraxium, there is the report coming out that Death Rebel, with their theme tunes for WWE, have been starting to use AI. I thought with Naomi's, because I felt like, for me, part of the learning what is AI is literally just briefly fiddle with it yourself so you kind of know what it sounds like, so you know what kind of stuff it pumps out. Same with like the image generator or ChatGPT. Don't use it regularly, don't rely on it. If you fiddle with it a little bit, then you can learn how it works, so you can learn how to spot it. Like, I'd be teaching media literacy in schools, but also I feel like this is vital. Like, people need to know how to pick out when an AI has written it, and there are lots of little things that jump out. There's little details and rhythms that you will pick up on, be it with like the images, with the text, and with audio. You will pick up on it if you've played about with it for a little bit, because it is derivative and it does have such strong repetition that it really is worth at least a little bit just digging in to see how it works. But I thought it with the Naomi one, and it was when the voice kicked in with the singing on it, I was like, oh, I want to say, like, that kind of rhythm for the singing, what they were doing in there, felt very AI. Doesn't mean it was, so I let it go. But then the report came out, I was like, oh, no, yeah, and, like, the Fraxium one, I was like, oh, okay. So then when Naomi's theme played again this time, I was like, oh, now it really feels AI. Just, I had a little feeling beforehand when I listened to vocals, but now I'm like, oh, now I really feel it. But that doesn't surprise me at all. You know, why would you pay for somebody to make music that really feels correct for the character when you can get AI to make a derivative, fine version? So, you know, yet another area where AW are going to be able to just absolutely destroy them in terms of like quality entrance music. Like, just give Ruckus a raise. I've said this before. Give Ruckus a raise. Just let him run riot with it. And then you let WWE dig their own generic grave. And onto the other notes. Flair and Bliss got their standard tag title scene flow, with Bliss facing Roxanne Perez after Charlotte faced the other tag champion last week. I'm only going to say Bliss, because if I say her first name, my echo's going to kick off. Bliss busting her nose after a twisted Bliss to Rodriguez on the outside. Got to set up that quick roll-up loss. It is the women's division overall. I mean, it's been a while since that was the commonplace, where you get that every single week and maybe like a quick tag match that didn't mean anything. But it's still there in the DNA of WWE women's division. Speaking of the women, Jade Cargill had enough of Chelsea Green backstage and just brought her out to the ring for an impromptu match. Tiffany Stratton with the charge out to stop the post-match Scottish beating, and led us into Jade holding the title on her shoulder before handing it over. You know, a quick little note, because you've only got one more week. At least this and the Cody one have had been able to do some promos after King of the Ring, so it's not as rushed as these genuine three-week ones, because you've been able to do some character work, and now you can do more the going home kind of stuff. I mean, it doesn't feel two-night show big, but it's, you know, it's better than the CM Punk Gunter program. Speaking of these builds, Cody's promo on Cena tried his best to sell us on the gravity and importance of the match, which is just so difficult with these like only 3 weeks of like proper build and focus, and one of the dance partners is busy elsewhere. Cody wants the real John Cena at SummerSlam, as the commentators sell the challenger's laser focus and the street fight stipulation. Aleister Black and Damian Priest got a talking to camera video play, semi-talking and responding to each other in a fancy pre-recorded edited format. Just don't think about how that actually works. How did he know what the other was going to say? Just don't think about it. Just don't think about it. The Miz faced Jacob Fatu as a stage to bring out Sokoa and friends. The Wolfman getting such strong reactions, and clearly a man set for the on and up. Hikuleo again used as the difference maker Big Jacob used to be for Solo. So even if Jacob Fatu loses, like his trajectory is surely just on the up and up. And finally, Kiana James returned as a kind of mouthpiece for the Women's United States Champion in Julia after Kiana James was called up to Raw and they had absolutely zero plans for her. Finally found an idea for something for her to play with, cementing Julia in a tad more of a heel role too, which was needed as it felt like they weren't entirely sure what her character was. So I'm happy to see them just make a decision and just go with it. Even if Julia speaks perfectly fine English, but you know, America be hella racist. So give her a white person to speak for her. Anyway, that was SmackDown. Very week two of a 3 week build. Very standard. That's why I put the main event as my talking point. This kind of match I wouldn't normally even talk about because it still feels very standard buildy. But they did put the tag team in the main event and they did try and end on that chaotic ending that they love nowadays. But as I said, I was expecting just full on DQ finishes in these builds and oh boy, was I treated to some DQ finishes. We got the ref pull out on SmackDown and we also got a Ron Breaker charging out to cause another DQ on Monday Night Raw. Sometimes you just feel it in your bones. But also as they keep doing it, it's quite a safe bet. So jumping over to Monday Night Raw, live from Detroit, Michigan. 1 hour, 59 minutes edited on the Netflix. Opening with a second Hogan tribute. So really, the show length is immediately down to 1 hour 51. And it was a show bookended by Jey Uso, who both opened and closed the show, giving the space to not just feel like a third wheel for another Roman Reigns vehicle. So let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw.
Roman and Jey aren't done yet! Oh my God! Oh my goodness! Breaker about split Roman Reigns in half! Bronson Reed bulldozed through Jey Uso! And now the unpredictable badass Breaker is about to break Roman Reigns.
A show that kind of did some elevating work for Bron Breakker, in spite of Bronson being the one in the main event match. Paul Heyman interrupted the yeeting Uso at the start of the show and spoke to Jey from the heart, trying to sell the prophecy of family always letting you down as the crowd chanted OTC, OTC. A failed attempt to put a wedge between Jey and Roman. No fear, there was always the by force plan later in the night. No idea what the crowd chanted in response because the edited version muted the crowd with a dull sounding boo badly mixed over instead. Jey's comeback correcting Heyman. He went for the world championship not to prove it to Roman, but to prove he could do it to himself. And that swings us into the main event of Jey Uso vs Bronson Reed. Nice to hear the crowd nice and quiet for the main event. Like, they liked yeeting. Bronson Reed got his boos, but it kind of got more of a kind reaction than an invested one. Like, no fear, tis a Raw event, so just wait for ye run-ins. Tope Suicida and a charging Bron revealed his plan. Attack Jey. Ah yes, such nuance. Ringing Roman out as the piped in crowd noise suddenly cut off for the real loud reaction in Reigns' pop. Just some top-tier sound editing. Just, oh dear, just you know, hard cuts. Not even trying to mix it well. Roman got in his punches, but DC sponsored AEW and we want to be Disney bitches. Great spot as a ringside charging Jey and Roman both ate shit. A mighty bronze spear to Roman and Bronson, Lariato to Uso. Tsunami, apron dive crashing over the announce desk, and we had Jey taken out and the beatdown focus on the big name in Roman. Real effort to make the baddie force a real threat on the go-home show. Breaker directing traffic as Reed flew with a tsunami to Reigns to end the show, before a big old double spear crashed out both our blood goodies through the barricade. Oh, and Bronson stole Roman's sneakers. Not a shoey with stolen sneaks. How dare ye, Bronson. I see it was main event angle doing a lot of work to really give some gravitas to the destruction of Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker, which was heavily needed, because as much as I've said they've put in the effort to make them not feel like your generic heavies for Seth, and do the best they can to really put forward that this is an elevation vehicle for definitely Bron, but an attempt for both of them. But also at the same time, the flow with the build of this match, because it's only got its 3 weeks, it does feel like your generic build where the stars are going to take on the heavies, and on the TV show you do your best to make them feel significant. But we get to SummerSlam, I'd be surprised if it's not Roman and Jey winning and kind of making them look a bit like heavies. But they're putting in the work, so maybe they could surprise me. They've shown on TV that they're trying to present them as more than just that, so it's time to back that up on pay-per-view. Really do your best. If I come out of that with them feeling like heavies and now Roman could go after Seth, I will be a little bit disappointed. Oh come on, he did the work. Do it. Elevate Bron in some way. Have him match up to Roman. He doesn't have to win. Don't make it feel like it was a match where the two heavies lost and now they can go after the real guy. And speaking of the real guy, Gunter, he had a message for CM Punk. He's held his own against supposedly the best talker in the world. Last week he looked him straight in the eye and told him what was going to happen at SummerSlam, leaving him speechless. So this week he rightly gloated about it, making the focus of the snap story clear. Who has the right to call themselves the best in the world? Punk immediately interrupted, needing to go into our SummerSlam with arc momentum. He needs the World Heavyweight Championship like a local sports team reference. Didn't understand understand what he talked about because I don't understand American sports. Almost like the story is perfectly fine to be simple. Because we're going into a whole different direction this weekend, it's a very standard 3-week build. Number one contender wins, champion gets the win, then goody challenger gets the win in their promo battles. Very run-of-the-mill kind of flow. And you find that character note and beat to try and pick out a little bit to try and add that gravitas to it. But part of me is relatively okay with it if we are doing the Seth Rollins cash-in. Arguably, the build isn't the worst thing in the world if you are then just going a whole different direction with the Seth stuff. Gunther retains or Punk just wins. It's a very different world. Because early in the week I did think, oh, Seth Rollins has set it as his mission to never let Punk be champion. But maybe he could do Punk as champion if you have him written off injured. Like, oh, then he's not going against his character and you get Punk to be champion for a little bit. It's popped into my head this week. So I was like, oh, I'd still just have Seth just cash in, but could that be that out? During the promo, Punk showed his disrespectful side and stopped Gunther from talking. The champion took that like a loss after successfully shutting down the talky Chicago man last week. Like, nah, 3-week build, bruv. Good old Punkerton's turn this week. But yeah, very run of the mill. They've only got 3 weeks. Very beat, 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 and then we're there. Which is, you know, which would be fine if they weren't trying to make it for like a 2-night huge arena stadium show. This is a build befitting like No Mercy or something. Backlash. This isn't like a stadium show level build we've got here. But something that did work for me. Women! Let's be more specific. Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, Stephanie Vaquer, and Nikki Bella versus Naomi, Chelsea Green, and the Scots. Every member of the Goody team with a strong reaction. Give me this over a badly written promo like the Valkyrie and Lynch segment we got just before this. Give me this every day of the week. WWE says they tell stories, and it's true, they just tell them badly. Then their audience doesn't care about the wrestling, but 1000% recondition their asses to expect tags like this with interflowing characters. A piss easy lesson to learn from their competition. Like, AEW have been doing this regularly since their start 6 years ago. 6 years ago, fuck. They haven't been around for 6 years. What are you talking about? I'm still in my 20s. I'm very much not. But this did so much good for both the SummerSlam title build and Clash in Paris Vaquer aftermath. And it's easy, just have the players interact. Having Alas come out and just state her character's motivations clearly and precisely is far more boring than having them show it in the in-ring action. But yeah, have them show it in that in-ring action. Like Vaquer getting the better of Naomi and countering her at every turn, instead of her cutting a promo where she says, I will get to the better of you. Which, 1000%, we've definitely seen that kind of promo being given. But this, if you show it to them, oh, far better. When it comes to how they write their characters, they do very much fall into the tell instead of showing. And if they do show, they make sure to tell. They do the ending of the last Stranger Things season. This is, might date the podcast for whatever, doesn't matter. They did it for the last Stranger Things season where they made sure to tell you, told the guy, oh, spoilers for Stranger Things. They made sure to tell you that that guy was Vecna about 5 or 6 different ways in the ending of the show. I don't know about you. I mean, I got it after one. They told you through the film language. They told you, it was like, oh, okay, he's Vecna. You get an ending where they tell you 5 or 6 different times and every single one of them is meant to, designed to feel like it's a reveal. It's like, yeah, I got it. Oh, making sure again. Yeah, I got it. Don't need to tell me again. WWE very much operate in that world of, okay, we're also catering to idiots, so we need to make it painfully obvious. And we say painfully obvious because those who got it for number one will find this painful. It's like, yes, I got it. Fuck's sake, I got it. You don't have to keep saying it. But that's how WWE kind of operate. But I would much, much prefer this. It's maybe why I click with AEW way more. Like, you can tell your stories through the wrestling. You don't have to stop the wrestling to tell your story. And in moments like this, where they do tell their stories through the wrestling, oh, I enjoy it far more. Sure, it's a multi-woman tag match in the middle of the show. It should be nothing special. But the way that WWE tells their stories, I just clicked with this so much better. It wasn't even that amazing a match. Because I'd had the Valkyria promo from beforehand, and I felt like she gave her best, but the script just sucked. Like, it's not her fault what she got to work with. Anyway, jumping onto the other notes. Mr. Phenomenon AJ Styles faced Dom Mysterio in a 6-person mixed tag match, teaming with Asuka and Kairi Sane as Dom teamed with his fellow Judgment Day champions Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez. The crowd nice and out for the close. AJ launching Kairi out to elbow Raquel on the outside certainly fit that Phenomenal moniker. That was an awesome spot. And then the crowd were white hot for the forearm finish. So challenger gets the win, Dom's retaining. But that's fine. That's okay. It feels like I should be, in terms of like the style of WWE shows, it feels like I should be enjoying Dom as champion, but they've not given him a lot to do. It's like they're inviting comparisons to the, I guess, Eddie China era of that IC reign, but he's not been given the defences to do it. So it's only like the backstage character work in relatively unfunny Judgment Day backstage promos. I swear, every one of these promos is aimed for comedy. The crowd just sounds dead. Come on, you're piping so much audio. Just pipe in a laughter, something. Staying on the Judgment Day check-in, Finn and JD faced LWO's Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Phoenix. I looked up Rebel Mendoza's name. Bare minimum. Look out, Trish. I've started doing research. The crowd were silent as fuck for this match, and that's even with the edited version badly piping in crowd noise. They didn't give a shit. shit about this one. The week after his win against Rusev, Sheamus faced Grayson Waller, a man with next to no TV time since moving to Raw during the Netflix initial weeks. Commentary talked about how New Day weren't on the show accompanying Waller because they were still in mourning for the tag titles. Like, yeah, I'm sure that's why they were not at the show. That was honouring an admitted next level racist. Rusev attacked after the bell, the feud continues. And then there's this Lyra Valkyria segment. I felt like all level cringy. She's, I can't remember what she said, but she had bright blue sneakers on with like leveled up, and these are like my Becky beating boots or something like that. And she did a little dance and a little twirl. I'm just like, oh, this script is so bad. I feel so sorry for you. You're doing your best. But this is just cringe level stuff. Like, oh. Also, it doesn't fit the level of animosity her character's been given during this feud that's kind of been building up. Like her being a little bit cheeky and a little bit, oh, look at me doing a little dance. I'm going to beat her up. Isn't that fun? Like, that's not what her character's been. It's a bad promo on like every level. Like, her script was shite, her effort was definitely better, but Becky's just saving everything right now. The crowd finally responded for the brawl as yet another SummerSlam match got a stipulation. A production signaled Becky's arrival with a Titantron little glitch off to the Raw logo for a second, letting Valkyria dropkick and snatch the kendo stick for herself and get to it. Yeah, so if I'm Becky, oh, I'm having a word with the truck. She was going to get the jump. Oh, and then they signaled to her, Becky's there. Oh, what dicks in the production truck. But yeah, it's one of those where I felt bad for the performer because she's trying her best, but what she's been asked to do is just shit. You know, you gotta fully commit to that spin if you're gonna do it. And, you know, Lyra tried, but, you know, can't turn all shit into gold. And finally, Sami Zayn had a sit-down interview with Corey Graves about his SummerSlam match with Karrion Kross. The man himself interrupted and took Graves' seat to set us ready for Sami's gradual world championship rise. The stipulation put on that the loser has to admit that the other was right. So either we get our Sami setback and that builds the support for Sami. He's like, no, Kross isn't right. You can do it. Or Sami wins and that's a bit more of a straightforward trajectory upwards. Either way, this is a program which feels like it is shifting Sami Zayn out of that upper mid-card and into a possible world title contender really well. My idea was you basically do that through the Gunter storyline, just repeat the Daniel Bryan thing and do the cash in with Seth, blah, blah, blah. But they're opting for like a much slower version of that. We're trying to build up that swell of support for Sami to try and convince him he's going to do it. So really, I don't think there's a bad result out of this, as long as the aftermath is continuing to, like I was describing right there. But anyway, that is the end of the show. I still feel like SummerSlam is going to hit the standard WWE have set for the show itself, but I can't argue that most of the build felt like it was for like a B-level show, just absolutely rushed. For me, it's crazy to only leave 3 weeks to build your two-night stadium show. For me, that's just mental. And the longest built one in Cody John Cena really is Cody winning King of the Ring. But there isn't really much build to the show specifically in those initial weeks before John Cena shows up for these 3 weeks building to this. Which, you know, it's just interesting to have watched these shows in stark contrast to what they're telling us on WWE Untold. How they want to present themselves and how I'm actually seeing are two very different sides. From seeing the backstage of this period where they talk about how they've got to plan out all these shows and it is about trying to keep it all these wheels spinning and keep it all in balance and just all these different things and making sure you're keeping in track what's happening in the future. And this is an interesting period to me to see that, but in an era where you are struggling to keep it all spinning and to make sure you've got that trajectory because you haven't quite clicked onto what that long-term thing is. I mean, that's more interesting, you know. They talked about character adversity, like, yeah, but you can fold that back in, show the backstage adversity of trying to figure it out, then you get it, instead of we're always great, we always figure it out. But that's not how WWE want to present themselves though, and they want Paul Levesque to be that Dana White kind of level guy. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the show. I'll be back this time next week to talk about SummerSlam both nights. Often with the pay-per-views I do a quick Monday Night Raw because it's like it's long enough going through all the matches. Pay-per-views I like to go in detail, so I'll be doing my big SummerSlam review. And as always, I'll be watching the WWE show, so you don't have to if you don't want to. A little shift to the schedule where One Nation Radio will be airing on a Thursday night, then going live on a Friday morning, then up for me, I get my edit like published at like 8:30 my time, which means it's like afternoon on a Friday. Then over the weekend, obviously, you get your Talk of the Tunnels. Don't know why I've elongated it like that. Tunnel talketh. Ye be on the weekends. Yeah, so just in case at the start of the week you're looking for your One Nation Radio and you somehow missed. Like, no. Somebody decided to tell you at the end of the show, said at the start where I plug everything, you know. Like with the newsletter. It took me ages, remember, to put that at the start. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about the WWE show so you don't have to. Adios.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.